let's have the Judiciary Committee come to order. It's just after 10 o'clock in the morning of Friday, April 29th, 2011, and we have a quorum to conduct business. Senator Wilikowski is here, Senator Coghill, Senator Pascoe, and myself, Senator French. We also have in the audience with us today Senator Dennis Egan and Representative Scott Kawasaki. Welcome, and it's nice to see you here. We're here to discuss ACEs this morning. The question of whether we need to adjust the ACEs system has been front and center this session, yet there has not been an opportunity for those of us who helped to write ACEs to fully air our side of the story. I think it's important for the public to hear that perspective. It's also important to make the presentation within the context of a committee hearing so that there's a permanent record made and archived. And I say archived because I believe that future generations of Alaskans will undoubtedly go through the same debate that we have been conducting this session. How do we, as a state, fairly value the mineral wealth that we all own in common? The Statehood Act and our Constitution compel us to think these matters through very, very carefully. In December of last year, Senator Wilikowski and I made a presentation to the Board of Commonwealth North on this topic, and we put together a few PowerPoint slides. Since then, though, Senator Wilikowski has greatly expanded that slideshow. He and his staff have really done an excellent job of researching and documenting every point that he will make today. So with that, I'm going to turn the microphone over to Senator Wilikowski.
Take a brief at ease, Mr. Chair.
We're back on the record. Senator Wilikowski.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the opportunity to do this, and I know Alaskans are very eager to learn about what is, in my opinion, the most important debate that we've had this year, if not in many years. So I appreciate the opportunity to do this, and I want to thank you because you really were the impetus for this. You and I, as you mentioned, gave a presentation to Commonwealth North. You started the ball rolling on this, and I want to thank you for that. Little background on sort of how we got to where we are. In 2006, the legislature overhauled the state's outdated oil and gas system. We had a previous system called the ELF. ELF is the economic limit factor. And that was put in place in 1977. And that set a gross tax structure of between 12.25% and 15% of the gross value of the oil that was pulled out of the ground. It was a complex set of adjustments. And what ELF also did was it put in a process where as fields became marginal and as you had satellite fields, they were taxed, many of them were taxed at 0%. And the larger fields like Prudhoe Bay, largest field in North America, Kuparuk, second largest field in North America, had a declining tax structure as well. The theory being that as taxes dropped, as fields became marginal, the tax rate would drop and there'd be more investment. And ultimately what happened was in 2003, you had 14 out of 21 fields on the North Slope paying a 0% production tax rate. By 2006, you had 15 out of 19 fields on the North Slope paying a 0% tax rate. And so we essentially have over 20 years of experience here in the state of Alaska with a 0% production tax rate. And we'll see the impact of that. We'll see whether or not that actually worked in the state of Alaska, whether or not that created more jobs, whether or not that created more investment, whether or not that stemmed the tide of the decline through the Trans-Alaska Pipeline. Now, the Alaska Constitution is very clear. We have a unique constitution. One of the last states in the nation, we had the benefit of looking at other states and the mistakes that they made. And one of the unique things that we have in our constitution is a provision that the natural resources belong to the people of the state. It's very different than in, say, North Dakota, Louisiana, or Texas, where if you're a private property owner and you go out and you happen to buy a piece of land that has oil in it, you own the oil. In Alaska, our constitution says the resources belong to the people of the state. And Article 8, Section 2 specifically says the legislature, the onus is on the legislature, shall provide for the utilization, development, and conservation of all natural resources belonging to the state for the maximum benefit of the people, of its people. And so the consensus was in around 2005, Alaska was not getting the maximum benefit for our resources. 2006, as you know, Mr. Chairman, you were here. I know Senator Kokula is here. There was an attempt to change that. And there was a structure put in place called the Petroleum Profits Tax, PPT. This was a major development because this was the first time that the state of Alaska went from a gross tax structure to a net tax structure. Some of the problems that you have when going from gross is simple. That's one of the advantages of a gross system is you just simply tax whatever amount of oil comes out of the ground, you tax that amount. You get that back in a check to the state of Alaska. Under a net profits tax, the difference that you have is if you have you allow deductions. And so there are concerns over how much the deductions can be. So there was concern after the PPT was passed, state was still not getting the maximum benefit for the resource. So in 2007, the legislature came back, special session, and we passed the Alaska Clear and Equitable Share, ACES, as it is known. And one of the main things that we looked at during that time was to ensure that Alaska met its constitutional obligation to get the maximum benefit for our resources. Now, there were two major points, two major reasons for passing ACES. What was happening in the state of Alaska, and you'll see a little bit later on when we get into the numbers, is the companies were essentially in harvest mode. They were making huge amounts of money here in the state, and they were shipping that money and investing it in countries like Libya, Venezuela, Ecuador, countries with much higher tax rates, and we're not reinvesting it as much in Alaska. And so there were two major points when we passed ACES, and point number one was to really try to encourage reinvestment in the state of Alaska. And the way that we did that was we have extremely generous tax credits, extremely generous tax deductions. So if they reinvest in the state of Alaska, the tax rate is lowered significantly. On the other hand, if they don't reinvest in the state of Alaska, if they choose to take the money and reinvest it somewhere else, then we will receive the maximum benefit for a resource by taxing at a fair share. Now, what I try to do in this presentation is ACES working? And we'll just look at the facts. What do the facts say about whether or not we need to change this? And so we looked at eight different ways to measure the effectiveness. And I'm not going to read these, but we'll go through these one by one. So measure one, how has ACES affected the revenue Alaskans receive for our oil? This is a chart prepared by the Alaska Department of Revenue. Most of the charts that you'll see here were not prepared by me, Mr. Chair. I just want to be very clear about that. Most of the charts, in fact, were prepared by the Parnell administration, either the Department of Revenue, Department of Natural Resources, or some other department within the executive branch. This is an updated chart, actually, we just got within the last 2 days. And what it shows is that, you see, in the blue lines show how much the state earned from ACES. The red line is the projection of how much we would have earned under PPT, and the green line is the green bar is the amount that we would have earned under the economic limit factor, the old tax structure. Now, we passed ACES in 2007. PPT was passed in 2006. So what you find is under ACES, we've generated about $15 billion more than we would have under the old economic limit factor. And interestingly, we happen to have a surplus of $15 billion. So I know at the time we passed ACES, there was a big concern that we were going to spend it all. In reality, we've actually saved virtually all of it. What has this increased revenue done for Alaskans? Well, It's enabled the state to invest in more infrastructure, create more jobs, fund critical state services. Alaska was one of the states actually that really skirted the worldwide recession. It didn't hurt nearly as badly as it did in Alaska. The unemployment rates remained much lower here in Alaska than they did in the rest of the country. We also have the largest savings account in the United States now. Money that we brought in allowed us to pay back $5.5 billion loan that was used to cover prior budget shortfalls. That's for the constitutional budget reserves. We now have the largest savings account in the nation. While many other states across the country are facing bankruptcy, billions of dollars in deficits, we are actually have the largest savings account in the United States. As I mentioned, $15 billion. We'll have this year have a surplus of several billion dollars, and we expect the surplus again next year. So measure number two, how do our tax rates compare with other jurisdictions? Are we competitive? One of the things that you'll hear, we've heard from some of the critics of ACES, is that our tax rates are as high as 90%. However, in the 4 years since PPT and ACES passed, the average production tax rate has been 32%, and that's from the Parnell administration. But this is before tax credits are factored in. So this is a slide, again, that was presented by the Alaska Department of Revenue. And keep in mind, this is only the production tax rate. This does not include royalties, which are 12.5%. This does not include corporate income tax, which is 9.4%, property taxes, which account for a couple percent, or the federal income tax. But even when you factor those in, what we'll see is that Alaska is nowhere near the highest in the world. And so if you look at the average, this is the average nominal tax rate. Nominal tax rate, again, is just what your base tax rate is before tax credits. And the blue line is ACES. And what you'll see is in 2009, the tax rate averaged, oil was priced at around $70 a barrel. Tax rate was around 30%. In 2010, tax rate was around 32%. 2008, that's the year we had $147 a barrel. Taxes were around 42% or so. And you see what they would have been under PPT, you see what they would have been under ELF. Now, how do you calculate the tax rate under ELF? It's actually very simple. First of all, no production taxes are paid until a profit is made. And again, this is very different than under the old ELF system, under the gross profit system. It costs about $26 to get a barrel of oil out of the ground and to market. And that's about $20 in capital costs and operating expenses, and then about $6 in transportation costs. So if oil is $26 a barrel, companies pay no tax at all. Now, the base tax rate is 25%. So at $27, then they would pay a 25% tax rate on that $1 profit. Only after $30 of profit does the progressivity kick in, and progressivity is 0.4% added for every dollar increase per barrel. Now, just as an example, at $56 per barrel, tax rate is 25%. At $57 a barrel, because the company's now earned $30 in profit, tax rate goes to 25.4%. At $58, tax rate goes to 25.8%, et cetera, et cetera. Now, under the governor's proposal, Alaska would lose an estimated $8.2 billion over the next 5 years. That's actually a fairly conservative estimate. Many have estimated it to be around $2 billion per year. We're trying to give the more conservative estimates. In the following charts, what you'll see, now remember I talked about tax rates being the nominal tax rate. The actual tax rates are actually much lower. And again, this is a slide presented to the Senate Resources Committee by the Department of Revenue. This shows the effective tax rates. It's the actual tax rate. Under the green line is current law. The red line and blue lines are proposals that the governor has made. And so what you see is oil, just to pick $100 a barrel, it's been slightly higher than that, but the actual tax rate at $100 a barrel is about 27.5%. If you go to 110, it's about 32.5%. What the governor's bill would do is, for current fields, he would have that tax rate drop from 27.5% down to about 17.5%, and for new fields, drop that down to about 12%. So it's a significant drop, costing the state billions of dollars. And I know there are some who think the effective tax rates are actually much lower than this. maybe even as much as 5% lower than this. But again, trying to use conservative estimates here.
Senator, just take a break and let's welcome the minority leader. Representative Kurtula has joined us.
All right, thank you, Mr. Chair. So what we tried to do next is look at what some of the tax rates are in other jurisdictions around the world and how does Alaska compare? Because we've heard that Alaska is not competitive. We heard that companies are investing in other places around the world and Alaska needs to compete with those other places around the world. So this is a slide. The following slide is actually a slide developed by Chevron. It was presented by the Palin administration experts when they testified back in 2007 during the ACES debate. And this is called Capturing Fair Share. And I'll go through this, and it may be a little bit hard for some people at home to read, but this is the government take, and it's the change in government take from 2002 to 2006. And this was prepared in 2007, so it's a couple years old. I don't have any reason to believe at all that these numbers have lowered. In fact, a number of these, at least one of these, has actually increased fairly significantly. But if you look, these aren't the highest or the lowest in the world. These are simply governments that have changed their take between the year 2002 and 2006. And at the bottom, you see Libya, for instance. Libya changed their government take from around 81% to around 95-96%. Venezuela changed their take from around 85% to 94%. Algeria increased to around 90%+. China, 90%+. Kazakhstan, 90%+. Russia, 90%+. Angola, probably in the 80s. And so these are actually our competitors, Mr. Chairman, because Conoco, BP, and Exxon are majors here in Alaska, and now we have Repsol here in Alaska, another Spanish major, are investing in every single one of these countries. In fact, Conoco had to shut down some of its production in Libya. In Venezuela, they're no longer investing there because the country expropriated their assets, which is means they confiscated their assets of the international oil companies. That same holds true for Ecuador, which also nationalized assets. Russia at one point nationalized some assets as well, but there are still a number of the majors doing business there. So virtually all these countries are countries that are competing for Alaska dollars, Alaska oil company dollars. And they're places where the big three in Alaska are still investing. They're still continuing to invest in Libya, Algeria, China, Kazakhstan, Russia, Nigeria. And so I just want to point you to a couple other things that are not in here. One is the country of Iraq, which has a tax rate of around 98-99%. Actually, BP entered into an agreement where they would produce the oil of Iraq for $2 per barrel or less, and it results in a tax rate of around 98-99%. The UK has a tax rate here, a government take here, of around 55%. They actually, just a few weeks ago, increased their tax rate, just literally signed a sheet of paper and increased their tax rate up to around 82%. Actually, there's a tiered system. It goes from, I believe, 61-82%. The Gulf of Mexico is another interesting example here because it shows a tax rate, a government take of around 50-52%. What they're not counting in the U.S. Gulf of Mexico, and that would include the Outer Continental Shelf takes as well, Mr. Chair, is the significant cost for the acquisition of the leases, the signature bonuses. There's one of the experts who testified a few years ago in when we were presenting ACES was Daniel Johnson, who's a world-renowned oil expert. He's actually written several papers. He relied on other studies. And his conclusion is when you factor in the very high lease costs and signature bonus costs for the Gulf of Mexico and Outer Continental Shelf, this number actually increases to around 77%. So a significant increase. And just to give you an example, if you look at the Chukchi and Beaufort Seas, there was significant amounts of land that were leased out a few years ago for $3 billion. We had a lease of 500,000 acres for Great Bear on the North Slope. They bought it for $9 million. Oftentimes in Texas and in other states in the lower 48 where there's significant good quality shale reserves or other reserves, companies will pay $10,000 per acre, up to $10,000, sometimes more, sometimes less. $10,000 per acre for a similar acreage in the lower 48, Great Bear's lease would have cost $5 billion. So when you factor that in, you have a much higher overall take. The other thing which I want to point out with this slide is a lot of people like to try to compare us to Texas and Oklahoma and North Dakota. It's not an apples-to-apples comparison. In fact, the Parnell consultants, Gaffney and Klein, testified before the Senate Resources Committee just a month or two ago, and they said it really wasn't fair, that it's not appropriate to compare Alaska to the lower 48 states. In fact, they've testified it was more appropriate to compare us to countries like Norway, which have a 78 to 81% effective government take, or the UK, which now has a 61, 81% government take. And one of the reasons, again, for the invalid comparison to North Dakota and Texas is, number one, you're not taking into effect the lease costs, which are much higher. Number two, you have royalty rates paid to private landowners, which can be 25% or more, and that's gross tax. So it really is not an apples-to-apples comparison to compare Alaska to those states. And not only that, they're not sovereign nations. They're not sovereign states. They're private landowners that own the property. So, again, we've heard some people say Alaska is one of the worst places in the world to do business. Well, here are actually the worst places in the world to do business. The bottom 12, this is ranked by the Fraser Institute Global Petroleum Survey. It's a survey that was cited repeatedly by the Parnell administration. And the bottom 12, the ones that are highlighted, Bolivia, Venezuela, Russia, Libya, Kazakhstan, Algeria, Iraq, Ecuador, and Argentina, are all countries where BP, Conoco, Exxon, or Repsol are currently or have recently done business. Repsol is the one that is doing business in Bolivia right now, but BP, Conoco, and Exxon have recently done business in all these countries in the world, Mr. Chairman. These are the 12 worst fiscal terms in the world, and these are the places that have been competing for Alaska dollars, and there have been dollars flowing from the majors to these countries in recent years. What would the loss of revenue mean for Alaskans? Well, the estimates are $2 billion a year, $8.2 billion over 5 years. At current prices, it's significantly more. We probably deplete our rainy day savings account, the CBR, the statutory budget reserve, very quickly. We have future deficits. We have drastically reduced spending. We have cuts in revenue sharing, job service losses, increased local property taxes. And I point this out because I pulled up an old press release that I did for this municipality of Anchorage, which I represent. 42% of the population lives there. The state of Alaska in recent years has provided roughly $18 million in municipal revenue sharing, $100 million or so in retirement relief, hundreds of millions of dollars in capital budget projects. Just for the municipal revenue sharing and retirement cost relief, we have saved property taxpayers over $1,000 per year. It's actually $1,100 or $1,200 per year. If we no longer have the money as a state to provide just those two items, property taxes at Anchorage would rise probably $1,100 to $1,200 per year. That's not including the $500 million, $300 to $500 million or so that we've provided in capital projects to the state, to the municipality of Anchorage. And no offense to my friends in Fairbanks, they would see significant increases as well. In return, there are no guarantees of more investment. There are no guarantees for more job creation. There's no guarantees that more Alaskans would be hired. And so the question is this a reasonable gamble to take? Let's look at some more factors. Here's measure number three. How has industry investment decreased or increased since the passage of ACES? We've all heard the TV ads, the radio ads, the newspaper ads that show no one's investing in Alaska. Well, here's some of the facts. This is from an advertisement that was published in the Petroleum News, and I have the actual advertisement right here, Mr. Chairman. Happy to make copies of it for you. And I just typed it in because it wouldn't come out clear if I just scanned this in. But this is actually an ad that was in the Petroleum News in the last month or so. And this is the Alaska Department of Natural Resources. Here's a direct quote. Alaska, we're open for business. Alaska is successfully encouraging investment from companies that are new to the state, with the number of petroleum companies doing business in the state almost doubling from 2006 to 2008. Legacy producers on the North Slope are investing in their own assets, leaving room for new players. This is what the state of Alaska is telling the petroleum news community, that we're open for business. That's a good thing.
Let's stop for a moment and welcome Senator Tom Wagner to the hearing.
So if we look at industry investment and how it's done since the passage of ACES, what we'll find is that capital expenditures have increased consistently to all-time highs each year since the passage of ACES. Capital expenditures are things that are expenditures predominantly for drilling, seismic production, other types of costs that generate, produce oil. What you'll see is the blue line is the price of oil. In red is the capital expenditures, okay? So we passed ACES in 2007, and what you see is we've still continued to tick upwards. The interesting thing about this slide is that if you look at this period right here, we have oil rising to really historic highs around the world. And yet, this is a time when we had a 0% tax rate on 15 out of the 19 fields on the North Slope, 14 out of 19 or so. And what you see is capital investment is actually declining during that period. Here are the raw numbers. And you'll see that operating expenditures have increased. From 2007, the year we passed ACES, we've gone from $2 billion, slight dip in 08, back up in 09, back up in 10. And the capital expenditures, this is really where the production value comes from. We went from 1.5 to 1.9 to 2.2 to 2.3. And so the total operating and capital expenditures have increased from $3.6 billion to $4.6 billion. If we look further, 2011 forecasts. Now remember, we went from 4.6. 2011 forecasts were scheduled to go to 5.1 billion. 2012 were scheduled to go to 5.495 billion. 2013 is not included, but there's scheduled to be an increase in there. Now, these numbers aren't just pulled out of the air. These are actual numbers that are supplied by the oil companies. They're required to provide the department with an estimate of how much capital and operating expenditures they expect to do. So as you can see, these are all-time highs.
And let's welcome Senator Betty Davis to the committee. Welcome.
Now, one of the big questions that has consistently come up is, well, you've heard many times, well, these investments are due to maintenance. And actually, last year, the Parnell administration examined this issue. And the following is a slide that was presented by the administration to the legislature back in February of 2010. And this is the exact slide, February 4, 2010. And they asked the same question, are the increasing spending levels due to the maintenance costs? And regarding CapEx, again, which is capital expenditures, they say capital expenditures on pipeline repairs at Prudhoe Bay increased after corrosion incidents in 2006. However, the majority of growth in capital expenditures since 2007 is attributable to drilling, seismic, and other production-related activities, projects. Operating expenditures, since 2007, the proportion of total operating expenditures, OPEX, related to major repairs does not appear to be the key driver in the growth of total operating expenditures. So, the Parnell administration just last year testified that neither operating nor capital expenditures were due to, in a significant way, to increase maintenance costs. Now, there are many other factors that impact decisions to spend money. And as you know, Mr. Chair, back in 2008, we had a financial meltdown. We had worldwide recession, oil price plummeted, investment was down worldwide. In 2009, ConocoPhillips announced that it planned to lay off 4% of its workforce and cut capital spending by 12.6%. And they were very clear. They said, we're positioning ourselves in the current business environment to live within our means. Now, taxes are just one factor. And as the president of BP Alaska recently said, it's not always about the taxes. In fact, if you look at Cook Inlet, and I actually think Cook Inlet is an interesting example, Cook Inlet is still under the old oil tax structure. It's still under the ELF. And so Cook Inlet has a 0% tax rate. Cook Inlet, according to the USGS, has hundreds of millions of barrels of oil still there. They have trillions of cubic feet of natural gas there. We have a 0% tax rate there. and yet we haven't seen a flurry of activity there. In recent times, thanks to some legislation that Senator Wagner pushed last year, incentivizing a jackup rig, we have seen some companies interested in bringing, doing a little more drilling. But for years, we've had a 0% tax structure there. Not only do we have a 0% tax structure, state picks up a significant amount of the cost in Cook Inlet, at least 45 to 65%. We recently passed legislation for a 25% income tax credit. The Henry Hub price for natural gas in the lower 48 is $4 per thousand cubic feet. In Cook Inlet, Anchorage area, we're paying more than $7 per thousand cubic feet. As I mentioned, we're providing 100% credit for a jackup rig for the first well that's spudded. The state kicked in $30 million to actually pay for the rig, and yet we haven't seen this big flurry of investment there. So it's not just about taxes. There are many other things that factor in. Measure number four, how has ACES affected exploration and development? As I mentioned earlier, ACES encourages new investment through tax credits and deductions for exploration and development. And according to the Parnell Administration consultants, these credits and deductions are among the most generous in the world. In fact, the state has paid over $2 billion in tax credits since ACES passed. Here's the number of development wells that have occurred on the North Slope. North Slope is, I've heard it said when we were talking about ACES, it's one of the crown jewels in the world. It's a prolific hydrocarbon basin. I've heard testimony in the past that the success rate for a well on the North Slope can be 90%, extremely a rich hydrocarbon basin. And so development wells are wells to actually extract oil. These are wells where you pretty much believe there's oil there, you feel very confident, you're putting in a well to extract oil. What you see was 2006, again, this is the year when we were just slipping out of the 0% tax rate, you had 137 wells that were drilled. 2010, you had 164 wells drilled, the highest number in 5 years, roughly a 23% increase in the number of wells. Now, we hear a lot of talk about exploration, and I'll get to that in just a second, but ConocoPhillips has testified they expect 90% of the future oil in the state of Alaska to come from existing units, Prudhoe Bay, Kuparuk, Alpine. If you expect 90% of your oil to come from existing units, you're probably not going to go out and do a whole lot of exploratory wells because you know where the oil is. And so we haven't seen a huge amount of exploration from the majors, but we are starting to see some more from the smaller companies since we passed ACES. In fact, this was testimony by Karen Rehfeld, the director of the Governor's Office of Management Budget, in testimony before the House Finance Committee on January 19th, the week before the governor introduced his oil tax bills. The good news is we are seeing a lot of increase in oil exploration. That's from the Parnell administration, Mr. Chairman, just a couple months ago. If you look at the number of application for exploration tax credits since 2006, there's been an increase. In fact, we hit an all-time high under ACES in 2009 in the number of applications for exploration tax credits. Now, measure five, how has ACES affected jobs in the oil and gas industry? Employment in the oil and gas industry has increased since ACES was passed. These are high-paying jobs, good-paying jobs, $14,000 per month, according to the Department of Labor on average. These are the jobs, and this again, this is from the Parnell administration. We put in some of these headers here. Passed ACES in 2007. In 2007, we had roughly 11,000, little north of 11,000 jobs. We are now sitting at 12,800 for the year 2011. Interestingly, again, if you look in this period right here, you have oil prices increasing to record highs, and you have on the North Slope jobs declining. In fact, jobs went from just shy of 10,000 down to 8,000 during a period of time when we had a 0% tax rate on 15 out of the 19 fields on the North Slope. We're now 2009, by the way, this was an all-time high. We hit an all-time high, and this was an all-time high. We're 100 short of the all-time high in 2011. The all-time high is 12,900, and I would just point out the Department of Labor just came out with their recent reports for the month of March, I believe, and we're at 12,900. So we're sitting very good in terms of the number of jobs on the North Slope. We're actually up 700 jobs from where we were a year ago, same time period for 2010. So this looks to be a good year on the North Slope. Now, if you look at the one of the things that you'll hear is, well, the reason that jobs were down back in 2002, 2003, 2004, when we had the 0% tax rate on most fields, was because jobs were not everywhere and no one was investing anywhere. But if you look at what's happening in the lower 48, this is probably a little hard to read, but this goes from January 2000 until October 2009. What you'll see is you have a steady increase. This is 2003. Jobs are increasing. And the red line is the lower 48 oil and gas employment numbers. And this is the Alaska employment numbers. And what you see is jobs are increasing in the lower 48, and they're actually decreasing in Alaska during the 0% tax rate. And here, this is after the passage of ACES, you see jobs continue to go up. And yet in the lower 48, you have a major spike downward. We didn't have that same spike in here, even though we had ACES in place. Good news for Alaskans. Now, where are the jobs going? Who's getting the new jobs? This has been one of the real contentious issues, because we've had very concerned Alaskans testify that they've lost their jobs. We've had people say they're very concerned about that. Companies are concerned that they've had to lay people off. Well, according to the Alaska Department of Labor, unemployment claims for Alaskan resident oil and gas workers increased 160% from 793 in 2006 to 2058 in 2010. In 2009, and the reason I picked 2009, this is the latest report. We just don't have the numbers for 2010. Roughly 50% of all new oil and gas hires were non-residents. How has ACES affected industry interest in Alaska? Well, we've actually seen, and this is really good news, we've actually seen, since the passage of ACES, a significant increase in the number of companies doing business here. One of the most recent lease sales in October 2010, a company new to Alaska called Great Bear bid on over 500,000 acres, paid more than $9 million in bonus bids. It's a small company, but they have studied the fields there. They believe there is significant shale oil resources there. We had a presentation, Senator Pasvin has done a lot of work on this. They believe that Alaska's has significant shale oil on the North Slope. They testified they believe they can put up to 1 million barrels of oil per day into the pipeline in the next decade. That's a pretty optimistic number, but if they're half right, that's pretty good. Now, if you look at the number of companies doing business in the state of Alaska, 2006, the first year tax filings were made under the net profits tax, you see we had 19 companies filing annual returns. 2007 grew to 26, 2008 grew to 36, 2009 grew to 39. So the statements that companies just aren't coming to Alaska to do business is just not borne out by the numbers, by the increase that we've seen in the state of Alaska. And this is from Parnell administration, by the way. Some other good news, early March, large Spanish oil company called Repsol, a massive oil company, 40,000 employees worldwide, announced plans to begin exploring in Alaska next winter. The company hopes to spend at least $768 million under a broad-reaching exploration and development program. They were particularly concerned because they're a large investor in Libya, and they found Alaska was an especially promising area for Repsol, as it has already shown to be oil-rich and carries low exploratory risk. They also mentioned the stability. They wanted to get out of countries like Libya, or not get out, but simply broaden their reach into places that were a little bit more stable. Now, this is from the Alaska Business Monthly, December 2009. ACES is particularly attracted to independent oil companies. What we were trying to do with ACES was to really try to spur competition on the North Slope, bring in more independents. And here's a quote from one of the new companies to Alaska, Savant Alaska LLC. Greg Vigils, the executive vice president. A lot of the prospects on the North Slope that are readily drillable are not large enough for the majors to chase, but for us, they're intriguing. And he went on to say, this is a direct quote, one of the big things is to let independent oil and gas companies know is that Alaska is open for business, and a big incentive is the ACES legislation. ACES rewards new investment. This is one of the things that's not generally highlighted, but the state actually pays for huge amounts of the cost of exploration and development activities. And I'll show you a few slides that were prepared by the Parnell administration in 2010 to talk about some of the credits and deductions that are available. And these are actual slides. I didn't prepare these. These were, we just scanned these in from the Parnell administration, the next four slides. This is a new entrant into the state of Alaska. So a new entrant with no current production pursues an exploration project requiring $200 million in investment. The company receives a $20 to $40 million investment credit, depending on location, worth $40 to $80 million. And 40% is, I believe, more than 3 miles outside of an existing unit. 20% would be within an existing unit. So most new entrants would probably get the 40% because they're probably in not in existing units. The company also receives an additional 25% credit for its tax loss or net operating loss worth up to $50 million. Total credits of $90 to $130 million can be directly recouped. So they could ask the state of Alaska essentially for a check for $90 to $130 million of their $200 million project. Either way, state pays $90 to $130 million for exploration. Company pays $70 to $110 million. But it's not actually that much, as you'll see in the next slide. If the exploration effort fails, the state never recoups the money. So the state bears the risk for failure, as does the new entrant. Again, slide prepared by the Alaska Department of Revenue just last year. If there is an exploration dry hole for a new entrant, state picks up 65% of the cost. Feds pick up 12%, company picks up 23%. For an existing producer, it's even more. State share is 76%, federal share is 8%, company picks up 15%. So given this level of investment, it is appropriate that Alaskans share in the profits that are sometimes generated. Alaskan, the largest investor on the North Slope is the state of Alaska, and we should reap the rewards of that. How has ACES affected company profits? Well, profits continue to be extremely strong. In fact, these are from ConocoPhillips consolidated income statements. You see in Alaska versus lower 48. This is earnings and production net income. 2008, Alaska profits were, this is the first full year of ACES, $2.3 billion, lower 48, $2.7 billion. 2009, $1.5 billion in Alaska, lost $37 million in lower 48. 2010, $1.7 billion made in Alaska, $1 billion in lower 48. In this quarter, first quarter of 2011, profits were just out. Conoco made $548 million in the state of Alaska. Exxon doesn't break out its Alaska profits. They made $11 billion in quarter one. BP's profits are probably a little bit less than ConocoPhillips, but they're we have reason to believe they're similar. If you compare Alaska profits versus the world profits, this is from the Petroleum News 2009. Alaska oil and gas production makes up 12% of ConocoPhillips' worldwide output in the first quarter of 2009. And Alaska operations earned the company $240 million, or 29% of its worldwide exploration and production income. ConocoPhillips acknowledged that Alaska production tax credits are a significant component in their company's profit. In the second quarter of 2009, Conoco had $725 million in earnings, exploration and production worldwide earnings, of which 55% of that, or $404 million, came from its Alaska business. So Alaska has consistently resulted in a significant percentage of ConocoPhillips' exploration production income. This year, I calculated this quarter, the Alaska oil and gas production made about 13% of the worldwide output and consisted about 28% of the worldwide exploration and production income. Healthy rates of return. In ConocoPhillips, New York City, March 23rd, 2011, there was a meeting with analysts. They were asked about Alaska. They said, we like Alaska. They said Alaska has, quote, strong cash margins and, quote, very good rates of return. This was one of the issues that came up during ACES. We were trying to figure out what are the rates of return for Prudhoe Bay, for the North Slope. And so we had a consultant that was hired, Gaffney Klein. Actually, it was consultant hired by the Palin administration. They developed a slide. They looked at the available SEC data, testimony from BP, from AOGA. We asked them, they prepared this chart. And it's probably a little hard to read, but we asked them to stress test this. In other words, we said, one of the things we heard was, well, capital costs are increasing. So we told them, increase capital costs by 300%. They did so. If you put your money in the bank, Mr. Chairman, you're lucky if you get 1% rate of return. If you put it in the stock market, maybe you get 8-10% rate of return. That's a good rate of return. The internal rate of return on the North Slope is Prudhoe Bay, 4 BP, was estimated to be 123% rate of return at $80 barrel oil. How has ACES affected oil and gas production levels? Well, oil production on the North Slope has been declining steadily since the late 80s. It declined under ELF when production taxes were zero. In fact, if you look at from 88 down to this is the time when we passed ACES, roughly here, significant declines, Mr. Chairman. We had a 0% tax rate for the majority of the fields on the North Slope, and we saw significant declines during that period of time. Here's the year-by-year North Slope production declines. It's averaged around 5.2%. Unfortunately, this is a natural. This is natural. This is you can't change the physics of an oil field. If you look at oil fields around the world, you'll see similar decline rates. However, what you'll also see is in the Parnell administration prepared their spring forecast, their fall forecast just last year, they estimated that the throughput decline will decrease to around 2% per year. That's not factoring in the Repsol's announcement. That's not factoring in Great Bear's announcement. So I think there's optimism that we could actually stem the decline and actually increase the amount of oil that we're putting in the pipeline. These are slides prepared by the Department of Revenue just last year, 2-25-10. These are typical oil field declines, and it mirrors what these are oil field declines around the world, and it mirrors what you see in Alaska. Now, one of the things that we've heard is the Trans-Alaska Pipeline going to shut down. This has been something we've heard from a number of different people. In 2006, BP Alaska told the United States Security Exchange Commission they expected continued production in Prudhoe Bay until the year 2065. That's a good thing. BP, Conoco, and Exxon testified in a Superior Court recent trial before Judge Gleason about how long they believed what the life of TAPS would be. They testified they thought it would go through 2042. They presented evidence in a recent trial that TAPS could function down to 200,000 barrels a day or lower. You probably need to add heaters, though. And the Superior Court judge recently determined that Trans-Alaska Pipeline would operate at least through 2047. The judge also determined that there is so much oil wealth on the North Slope that if you didn't have a pipeline today, they would probably build one to get the oil from the North Slope to market. Some closing thoughts. Just last year, the Parnell administration told the legislature that ACES does not appear to be having a negative effect on the oil and gas industry. In fact, here's their conclusion from February 4th, 2010, just last year. In general, the information does not indicate that changes in the tax system have had a direct negative impact on industry activity in the state. In fact, the data would indicate that the investment incentive provisions of ACES are contributing to increased levels of expenditure. Back in December 20, 2009, this is a direct quote from the Petroleum News, Governor Parnell at that time, Governor Parnell also said he has already discussed ACES with 10 oil companies in Alaska. Of those, he said 4 to 5 thought the tax system was just fine, while 2 or 3 thanked the state for the tax credit program, and 2 companies wanted to see ACES change. So that's an 80% thinking it's just fine or thanking him for the tax credit program, which is actually consistent with what was found by the Fraser Institute. Again, this is a group that went out and surveyed 645 oil company executives all around the world. They found that 74% of those executives said Alaska's oil tax fiscal terms either encourage production or do not deter investments. 40% say the Alaska oil taxes actually encourage production, and 34% it was not a deterrent. 9% said it was a strong deterrent. Conclusions. We had a 20-year experiment in Alaska to see if 0% taxes encouraged investment and created more Alaskan jobs. Under ELF, with most fields paying 0% in production taxes, jobs declined, investment declined, and production declined. Under ACES, investment and jobs are at all-time highs. The number of companies doing business has doubled, and profits are strong. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Appreciate the opportunity to present this, and I'm available for questions.
Thank you, Senator Wilkowski. I've heard the bells ring, so I know we're under a little bit of a short amount of time, but very thorough presentation, very comprehensive. I'm sure there'll be reactions. And I guess I would welcome the public
or anyone who hears this presentation to send criticisms of it either to me or to you, because I think it's an important part of the debate. Everyone wants to make sure their facts are straight. If there's something in that presentation that needs correction, or I'm sure you'd be happy to do that. But it's important for Alaskans to at least hear this side of the story, and I appreciate you putting this together. Senator Pascrane, any questions for our colleague?
No, I heard the bell as well.
Very good. Thanks again. We will stand in adjournment.